up in the sky, stormy weather. Since my gal and I ain't together, keeps raining all the time.
Hello and welcome once again to the St Albans and District Talking Newspaper, serving St Albans, Harpenden and the surrounding areas. This is the Saturn edition for the week ending Saturday, September the 7th, 2024. My name is Ian, and this week I'm editing and producing the programme. This edition of Saturn will once again be distributed on USB sticks. Please remember to return them in the wallet provided when you have finished listening. Additionally, the programme is available on our website, sadtn.org.uk, under Listen Online. If you're using a mobile device, then it's available via the British Wireless for the Blind Fund app. This can be downloaded free via iTunes or Google Play. Search for Talking Newspaper. Amongst other items, this edition has, as usual on the USB stick distribution only, the BBC In Touch podcast. We'll also have the usual news roundup and the national radio listings. Once again, we'll be delving into the London Beyond Sight archives. This time, a description of St Martin in the Field by Michael Elwin, the actor. There will also be the list of audio-described programmes on TV, courtesy of the Wharfdale Talking Newspaper, and Peter Burley will be presenting his look at events and entertainment in the area. To finish, I'll be looking at past events and birth dates in the upcoming week. This week's music is Stormy Weather by The Peddlers. More of them later. Let's move on to the news read by Vivian, Christina and Karen.
Hello, I'm Christina. My first article is how pubs have reacted to outdoor smoking ban proposals. Pubs in St Albans and Harpenden have reacted after the Prime Minister appeared to confirm reports of a ban on outdoor smoking. Keir Starmer refused to rule out a ban on smoking outdoors when questioned last Thursday, August the 29th, following reports in national newspapers that the government are planning to announce new laws. Smoking has been a hot-button political issue this year, with the then Prime Minister Rishi Sunak announcing plans back in April to ban the sale of cigarettes for future generations. The new government shares Sunak's desire to crack down on smoking, citing the 80,000 preventable deaths it causes each year. But the plans have been met with negative reaction from the publicans, who fear the impact on their business at a time when the hospitality sector is already struggling. Kieran Ramsey from the Harpenden Arms said it would definitely have a negative impact. Like everywhere, we have a smoking area, and bringing this in would impact people's enjoyment of the pub. People who smoke would feel ostracised and will go and smoke elsewhere. Ryan Gould from the Victoria in St Albans agrees, saying we see fewer customers coming in, not just here, but at all pubs. He added, as a sports bar, we know a lot of people like to have a smoke outside while watching the football. His view was not entirely shared by James Pratt of St Albans Robin Hood pub. He said, we don't know what the impact will be until it becomes law. Although the smoking bans indoors didn't really affect us, I suppose this won't either. He's still opposed to the ban on principle, but said the people who want to come for a drink will still come for a drink. Reaction from readers has been negative, with more than a dozen weighing in on social media. One wrote, it's out of order. We already have a sustainable promise with the no smoking indoors policy, which I agree with. This is one step too far. Another said, I'm not a smoker, but people who want to should be allowed to outside. I think this will harm the pub and bar industry. And now some news from Rennie Grove. It's Sustainable September. Rennie Grove Peace Hospice Care is calling on local people to take part in its annual Sustainable September campaign. The month-long event is back for its second year, bigger and better than before. The charity is encouraging people to participate in the challenge by wearing one item of clothing or an accessory from a charity shop each day in September. Rennie Grove Peace will be sending out a weekly email newsletter with styling tips and tricks from St Albans-based personal stylist and founder of Lux Leopard Lifestyle, Alex Stanley. Each newsletter will feature a theme to inspire participants with their outfits for that week. Residents are spoiled for choice of Rennie Grove Peace shops to visit for their outfits, with three in St Albans and two in Harpenden. Those taking part are asked to simply tag Rennie Grove Peace in photographs of their outfits on Instagram at RGP Hospice or Facebook and use hashtag RGP Sust Sept. There will be a prize draw at the end of the month that will include anyone who has uploaded a photograph and tagged the charity during the 30-day campaign. Deborah Gould, Director of Retail and Trading at Rennie Grove Peace, said, "We are delighted to be bringing Sustainable September back as an even bigger and better event in its second year. Secondhand fashion continues to grow in popularity, and this challenge is a great way for us to show how pre-loved clothes can be part of your everyday routine." People who took part last year told us they enjoyed the challenge of creating different outfits throughout the month. "We're encouraging people to head down to their local Rennie Grove Peace shop to see what they can find. Whether it's a whole outfit, one piece, or an accessory, there's something for everybody in our shops, and the fun comes in how you mix and match items throughout the month. Rennie Grove Peace charity shops stock high-quality pre-loved clothes, accessories and homeware, and raise vital income to fund its services which support patients with life-limiting illnesses. The charity also has an online presence via its eBay shop. To find out more, and to register to receive the weekly email newsletter with styling tips and tricks for Sustainable September, visit renniegrovepeace.org/sustsept. To find your local Rennie Grove Peace Hospice Care charity shop, visit renniegrovepeace.org/shopwithus. Performance of Hay Fever set for the Abbey Theatre. Noel Coward's Hay Fever is set for the Abbey Theatre main stage, kicking off a theatre company's 90th season. The company of 10 will bring the comedy that explores the eccentricities of the Bliss family, a group of artistic, self-absorbed individuals whose theatrical personalities turn a quiet weekend in the country into a whirlwind of misunderstandings and romantic entanglements. Director Alison Wright says it's fabulous to open the Company of Ten's 90th season with the Coward classic Hay Fever, celebrating its 100th year. Hay Fever is all about style. It's beautifully crafted, with the style and wit of Coward's exquisite writing complementing the style of our 1925 country house setting, costume and props. We're going to do it in style. Performances take place in the Abbey Theatre on September 13th and 14th at 8 p.m, with a matinee on September 15th at 2:30 p.m. There are then performances from September the 17th to the 21st at 8 p.m. To book tickets, please go to www.abbeytheatre.org.uk or call the box office on 01727 857 861. St Albans ranks as best commuter town. St Albans has been named as the best commuter town in and around London, according to new research. Property giants On the Market analysed Google search data, as well as factors including distance to the city centre, transport links, nearby schools and other amenities, to decide the best commuter towns for London. St Albans makes the list for its close proximity to the capital, good transport links and the amenities that make it a popular choice for commuters. Announcing the result of its survey, On the Market said, St Albans has become quite the up-and-coming place for commuters, as while the city is typically known for its Roman heritage and stunning cathedral, it also has a vibrant city centre with plenty of restaurants, shops and nightlife. Consultation on parking pass for older people. A consultation has been launched for a proposed access pass in St Albans district to help older people with parking. St Albans City and District Council is considering the introduction of the pass to aid those who might have difficulty with digital payment methods. A public consultation has started into the proposal aimed at ensuring people do not feel digitally excluded. Under the proposals, those eligible would be able to purchase an annual access pass, which they could use at all council car parks. The pass would cost £190 a year and be valid for one visit a day for up to 3 hours. To be eligible for the pass, a person would need to be a resident of the district and be born before 1954. Councillor Helen Campbell, Chair of the Public Realm Committee and Lead for Car Parking, said, "We are committed to being an inclusive council that is responsive to the needs of all our community. We know that many of our older citizens are happy to pay by contactless card and mobile phone apps, but there are some who struggle with these modern methods. An access pass is designed to help them by providing a more traditional way of paying, making it easier for them to use our car parks. Residents can view the proposals at https://www.stalbans.gov.uk/TROS or email parking.developments@stalbans.gov.uk with their views.
This item is called HSBC Opens Cash Pod After Branch Closure. HSBC has opened a new cash pod in Harpenden a year after closing down the town's branch. The banks say the pod, the second to open in the UK, will allow customers to check their account balance, print mini statements, activate a card, and reset the pins, as well as making payments linked to their HSBC credit card. Located in Station Road, the pod will be open for 24 hours and will be free of fees. The HSBC branch on Harpenden High Street closed its doors in September 2023, with the nearest branch now being in St Albans. There are now plans for the former branch to become a pharmacy after a planning application was submitted earlier this month. The dwindling number of high street banks in Harpenden has led to calls for the town to be used as a pilot for a banking hub. A post office run centre shared by all banks that customers can use in lieu of a traditional branch. Former MP for Hitchin and Harpenden, Bim Afolami, championed the scheme, both in his capacity as the town's representative and as a Treasury Minister in the last government. These calls were rejected because of the presence of Nationwide on the High Street, despite it being a building society, something Mr. Afolami labelled as a nationwide block. In January, HSBC sought to address branch closures by announcing 10 cash pods in areas where the branch had recently closed. Andrew Byrne, HSBC's UK's local director, said, "We continue to invest tens of millions of pounds into our branch network and local communities across the country. Helping customers to maintain access to cash is very important to us, so we are very excited to be switching on our cash pod here in Harpenden. We will continue to improve our services in local communities alongside introducing digital and new innovations, making banking simpler and more convenient." Harpenden has seen a general decline in the number of high street banks in recent years, with Halifax, Santander, NatWest and Lloyds among those closing their branches. This item is called Plans for New Flats on Top of Existing Block Submitted Again by Liam Fitzpatrick. Controversial plans to build three new flats on top of an existing block of flats in St Albans have been resubmitted, despite having been refused twice before. CDS Town Planning has once again submitted a proposal to the District Council that would see an additional story built on top of the Butler's Yard complex in the city centre. This would provide three new flats, something developers say is much needed. The saga dates back to 2022, when a version of the plans was first rejected, following a backlash from existing residents at the site. Plans were originally rejected on the grounds it would harm the character of the area, particularly impacting on the Grade 2 listed St Peter's Church. After being rejected a second time in 2023, the plans seemed to inch a step closer earlier this year when a rejected appeal noted that the proposals had been improved and did not represent unacceptable harm. While the application was still dismissed, developers are now hoping it will be third time lucky with their latest proposal. A letter accompanying the application says, "This proposal would bring forward high-quality homes in a sustainable location that would be in keeping with the character and appearance of the area." It goes on to say, "This revised proposal represents a high-quality extension that is wholly in keeping with the existing building and completely set back from the elevation of the building." The application also claims issues surrounding the height of the building have been addressed, saying the council has now accepted the proposed height of the building after the building of the fourth story. The proposed new flats would be all one-bedroom properties designed to house two people. The application has now been submitted to the district council and is open to public consultation. Residents have until September the 21st to do so by visiting the St Albans City and District Council planning portal and entering the reference 13/08/2024. This item is called Carer Hails Kindness of Park Staff. The subheading, "They Recover Girls' Favourite Toy from Lake at Verulamium Park," by Liam Fitzpatrick. A St Albans carer has hailed the beautiful human beings who saved the day after a girl with special needs lost her favourite toy in the lake at Verulamium Park. Julia Swanswick cares for Amelia, 12, who has severe special needs and is non-verbal. On a visit to the park in late July, Julia and Amelia were playing hide-and-seek when she dropped her favourite toy, a puppet of Sweep from popular children's programme Sooty and Sweep, from the bridge into the lake below. Julia said she wanted him back but couldn't quite understand why we couldn't just recover him. "I thought, oh my gosh, that's it, he's gone now. while she kept pointing to the lake and making noises. After heading down to the lake, they found that Sweep was stuck in the lake, submerged in water. The first act of kindness came from an elderly couple who told them there is a park keeper who could potentially help. They headed to Grebe House Wildlife Garden, where Julia says Amelia was very curious about the whole thing, trying to explore the office. She says staff there interacted with Amelia beautifully after it was explained that she was non-verbal, something that isn't always the case. Staff called park keeper Robin, who came out to help. From there, things started to look up. As Julia explained, Robin trampled down through all the stinging nettles with his rod and net, and he went all out, above and beyond, to try and rescue Sweep. By this time, we had a bit of a crowd gathering to see what's going on. Eventually, he scooped her out of the water, and a great big cheer went up. Amelia was signing that she wanted to give him a kiss. I said, absolutely not, as he was filthy. Reflecting on that day, she said, all the staff at the park were so kind, and I just want to recognise their kindness and how amazing it was that everyone went above and beyond for Amelia. Joe and the team at Grebe House were so wonderful, and I want that to be recognised and appreciated. And there are photographs of Amelia with Julia and her beloved Sweep, and also a photograph of Robin digging out the toy from the mud. This item is called Carer Recovers His Stolen Bike, with a subheading, Overjoyed Sarmad Spots It for Sale. A St. Albans carer says he is absolutely overjoyed after recovering his prize bike from a suspected thief that stole it from a train station. Sarmad Bukhari had been left heartbroken on August the 28th when the bike was swiped from St. Albans station. Not only was the bike a passion project for Sarmad, it was also his livelihood, serving his only means of transport to work, where he cares for elderly people with dementia. But after an emotional appeal to this newspaper and social media, Sarmad recovered his bike. He explains, I found the bike listed online, pretended to be a buyer, and arranged a meet-up. The police warned me it could be dangerous, but I knew I had to act. The seller wanted to meet at his house, but I convinced him to come to a public place instead. Upon his arrival, he called police, who arrested a man on suspicion of possession of stolen goods. Having successfully retrieved the vehicle, he said, I am absolutely overjoyed to have my bike back. It's been an emotional roller coaster, but the support from the St. Albans community has been incredible. This bike isn't just a mode of transport for me. It's something I put my heart and soul into restoring. It's essential to my work, caring for dementia patients, so having it back means I can continue to be there for those who depend on me. On the significance of the bike, he said, I bought this bike when it was on the verge of being thrown away, and I decided to give it a second chance. I recycled it completely, putting in hours of work to change the tyres, brake pads, and handlebars myself. I've always believed in recycling and giving things a new life, and this bike became a project I was deeply interested in. Hertfordshire Constabulary confirmed the case is now being overseen by the British Transport and Metropolitan Police, who were unable to provide further information at the time of writing. This item is called Police Hunt for Armed Suspect as Shop Raided. Man with knife attempts to rob city centre shop. An armed suspect is still at large following reports of an attempted burglary at a St. Albans city centre shop. Police were called at around 10:10 a.m. on Monday to reports of a robbery at CEX in French Row by a man with a knife. Officers have since been searching for the suspect in the area with the help of the Armed Response Unit, but the suspect remains at large. On Monday night, a spokesperson for Hertfordshire Constabulary said, residents may have noticed a police presence in St Albans city centre. Please be reassured, officers are searching for the suspect in the area. It was reported that the suspect had a knife, and so the Armed Response Unit are supporting officers as a precaution. No injuries have been reported, and, at this time, nothing is reported to have been stolen. On Tuesday, police confirmed that inquiries to trace the suspect continue and that the incident is being treated as an attempted aggravated burglary. Anyone with information is asked to call 101 or report online quoting ISR 182 of the 2nd of September.
Hello, this is Karen, and this is an article from the Hearts Advertiser. Pub in the Park Festival announces new stage to showcase upcoming talent. Tom Kerridge's Pub in the Park has announced a second music stage for this weekend's festival in St Albans. Organisers have confirmed that the headliner stage will showcase 23 young artists from across the Hertfordshire region. The announcement comes after music management group Headliner ran a summer-long competition to find four acts to support the big names on the main stage at Verulamium Park. The success of the competition has led to the creation of a second stage, allowing audiences to get a glimpse of potential stars of the future. Having run shows at the Pioneer Club, the Suet Yard and Darkwood Studios in St Albans, the festival will mark Headliner's first time producing a festival show. Headliner CEO Paul Watson said, "Headliner has always been passionate about championing aspiring talent. To be able to showcase some of the artists we have worked with over the last weeks and months on our own stage at a festival that we know well and is local to us is an amazing feeling." St Albans has a history of producing musical talent, with Enter Shakira having played their first ever gig at the Pioneer Club. The city can also lay claim to Mercury Prize shortlisted band Friendly Fires. Organisers will hope that this weekend's festival is the beginning of the journey for a future industry giant. The headliner stage will run at the following times throughout the weekend. 5:40pm till 8:30pm on Friday evening. 12pm till 2:50pm on Saturday afternoon. 5:40pm until 8:25pm on Saturday evening. 1:30pm until 5:20pm on Sunday afternoon. Verulamium Park festivities serve as a grand finale for the festival's summer roadshow after previous stops in Marlow, Chiswick and Reigate. The weekend combines food, music and entertainment and has been a September staple in St Albans since 2019. Tickets remain on sale for the festival, which runs from Friday until Sunday, September the 6th to the 8th. These can be purchased at www.pubintheparkuk.com. Celebrating 50 years of Talking Newspaper. Hundreds turned out to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the St Albans and District Talking Newspaper. Around 150 volunteers, the visually impaired community and friends and family were joined by dignitaries to celebrate at the Shenley Club. In 1974, a St Albans couple, Ray and Meg Bousfield, recorded the Hearts Advertiser onto a reel-to-reel tape recorder and made a cassette copy to take to a blind neighbour. The number of listeners steadily grew, and soon the couple, aided by a growing band of volunteers, were taking cassette tapes to over 200 local people. Today's team record each week an audio programme that's over 2 hours long. St Albans and District Talking Newspaper provides visually impaired residents with a weekly audio programme of news, features, interviews, audio books and more.
Now here's Gilly reading the National Radio listings.
Hello, this is Gilly with the radio listings for the week beginning Saturday, the 7th of September, compiled by Leslie. So let's have a look at some of this coming week's radio highlights, beginning with programmes that are broadcast each day and at the same time from Monday. Bird in the Hand is a five-part drama from 2020 starring Pippa Nixon, Hayden Gwynn and Ben Miles as a man determined to get written back into the will of the mother of his dead partner. But she proves by turns demanding and offensive. BBC Radio 4 Extra at 8:30 a.m. repeated at 1:45 p.m. and 7:45 p.m. Book of the Week is The Story of a Heart, written and read by Rachel Clark. It is the story of how one family's grief was transformed into a life-saving gift and the medical advances that make transplantation possible. Radio 4 at 11:45 a.m. repeated at 12:30 a.m. Uncharted with Hannah Fry is about the power of numbers behind human stories. The presenter's second 10-part series begins with Love Bites and mathematician Chris McKinley's struggle to find love. What could be messing with his odds? On Radio 4 at 1:45 p.m. The subject of Composer of the Week is Arnold Schoenberg. This week, presenter Kate Mollison explores the twists and turns of the composer's life and tracks his changing relationship with art through the prism of five different visual works, beginning in Vienna, the city of his birth, on Radio 3 at 4 p.m. And Book at Bedtime continues readings from Alice Munro's collection of short stories, The View from Castle Rock. In The Ticket, which concludes on Tuesday, a woman on the cusp of marriage prepares to leave behind old certainties for a better life. Radio 4 at 10:45 p.m. Back to Saturday, 7th of September. The BBC Proms, live from the Royal Albert Hall, continues its celebration of choral music with the Jason Max Ferdinand Singers in a concert straddling classical, jazz and gospel on Radio 3 at 2 p.m. Andy Saltzman returns with a new series of The News Quiz at 12:30 on Radio 4, repeated Monday at 11 p.m. on Radio 4 Extra. In Political Thinking with Nick Robinson, the Today presenter begins a new series of interviews with major political figures about their lives and careers, Radio 4 at 5:30 p.m. And opera singer Kiri Takanawa is the subject of This Cultural Life at 7:15 p.m. on Radio 4. On to Sunday, 8th of September. For anyone with fond childhood memories of The Clitheroe Kid, six episodes air for the first time in more than half a century, starting with Jimmy's obsession with the Wild West. Radio 4 Extra at 10 a.m, repeated at 3 p.m. and 9 p.m. In Tune presenter Katie Derham lives in the Sussex house once occupied by the family of Arthur Christopher Benson, who wrote the words to Elgar's Land of Hope and Glory. In the Sunday feature, Home of Hope and Glory, she invites guests, including conductor Mark Elder, to her home to discuss the work at 6:45 p.m. on Radio 3. Chinique, Britain's only orchestra of black and ethnically diverse musicians, returns to the BBC Proms at the Royal Albert Hall, Radio 3 at 7:30 p.m. Next, Monday, 9th of September. In Great Lives, Joe Brand nominates the American blues singer Bessie Smith, 1894 to 1937, at 3 p.m. on Radio 4. Like That is a play by Annie Caulfield from 1996, starring Linus Roach and Lenny Henry. When two childhood friends are reunited, their friendship begins to crack under the strain of secrets and lies. Radio 4 Extra at 3 p.m, repeated at 9 p.m. Live from the Royal Albert Hall, tonight's BBC Prom features the BBC Symphony Orchestra playing Vaughan Williams' Fantasia on green sleeves, Schoenberg's Violin Concerto, and Shostakovich's Fifth Symphony at 7:30 p.m. on Radio 3. Now, Tuesday the 10th of September. The afternoon drama is entitled Going Dark. In 1642, the lives of three actors are devastated by a theatre ban that lasts 18 years, during which time they witness the upheavals of plague, civil war, Puritan persecution, and the execution of their royal patron Charles I, before their eventual triumphant return to the stage in 1660, following the Restoration. When it hits the fan, the programme which looks inside the world of crisis management and spin doctors returns for a new series at 4:30 p.m. on Radio 4. Tonight's BBC Prom is a performance of Benjamin Britten's A Midsummer Night's Dream in a semi-staged version of Garsington Opera's production with the Philharmonia Orchestra, and soloists including Yestin Davis as Oberon and Louche Crowe as Titania, at 7:30 p.m. on Radio 3. And don't forget In Touch at 8:40 p.m. on Radio 4. For Wednesday the 11th of September, in the second eight-part series of The Coming Storm, Gabriel Gatehouse steps back into the American political undergrowth to discover how remarkably mainstream conspiracy thinking has become and how this fuels the divisions within the United States in the run-up to this year's elections. Tribe of Two is the afternoon drama. Growing up with being a mixed-race kid in noughties rural Devon, Mari has never felt she belongs. Moving on to university, she finds life in the city of Plymouth offers a fresh sense of identity, at 2:15 p.m. on Radio 4. And in The Invention of Taiwan, Misha Glennie investigates the histories and the people that makes Taiwan the nation it is today, a time when tensions are increasing over China's claim to the island, at 3:30 on Radio 4. Looking at Thursday, 12th of September, Flying High is a documentary about the peregrine falcon, the fastest animal on or above the earth. 60 years ago, it was close to extinction, but is now to be found all over the world, including here in St. Albans. Presenter David Lindo, the urban birder, reveals how human beings have played a key part in both its decline and its astounding recovery. On BBC World Service at 9:30 a.m, repeated at 8:05 p.m. Today's afternoon drama is entitled Edith Sitwell in Scarborough. Glenda Jackson stars as the acclaimed poet, writer and critic in a play combining fact and fantasy. Sitwell encounters her younger self while on a visit to her native Scarborough and plots revenge on her cruel parents, on Radio 4 at 2:15 p.m. And in tonight's Late Night Prom, André Schiff adds to his repertoire of performances of Bach with The Art of Fugue, live from the Royal Albert Hall, at 10:15 p.m. on Radio 3. Lastly, we come to Friday the 13th of September. Central Intelligence is a new 10-part drama starring Kim Cattrall, Ed Harris and Johnny Flynn about the history of the CIA from the perspective of Eloise Page, who joined on the agency's first day in 1947 and became one of its most powerful women, at 2:15 p.m. on Radio 4. From the BBC Proms, the Royal Albert Hall, Ian Skelly introduces the Orchestra of the Age of Enlightenment in symphonies by Mozart, Louise Farrenc and Beethoven, played on period instruments. And finally, beginning a new series of free thinking, Anne McElvoy and guests discuss democratic power and the theories of German thinker Carl Schmitt at 9 p.m. on Radio 4. Happy listening.
Thanks very much, Gilly. Now, another from our series, London Beyond Sight. This is one of the many items that can be found on the Vocalise website. This time, actor Michael Elwyn describes St Martin in the Field.
My name is Michael Elwyn. I'm an actor and occasional director, and I've been in this business since 1964. I have a close family connection with St Martin in the Fields through my mother's brother, Eric Loveday, who was the much-respected vicar here between 1941 and 1947. Even as a small boy, I was aware that Uncle Eric had an important position. He was vicar to the Prime Minister and the Royal Family, as both 10 Downing Street and Buckingham Palace lie within the parish boundaries. Sadly, I only knew him for a short time because of his early death in Australia while on a preaching tour after the war. There's a memorial to him in St Paul's Cathedral, Melbourne, where he preached his last sermon. St Martin stands on the northeast corner of Trafalgar Square. There's been a church on this site since the 13th century, and as the name suggests, it was originally surrounded by fields. The present building dates from 1726 and was designed by James Gibbs, an architect much influenced by Sir Christopher Wren. There are lots of imposing buildings surrounding the square, but St Martin's stands out with its tall spire and its grand exterior, particularly as it's recently been cleaned and restored. A wide flight of stone steps leads up from the pavement to the high stone-flagged porch. The triangular pediment of the porch is supported by 8 massive stone columns, and standing just inside the porch is a modern sculpture in Portland stone, designed by Mike Chapman to mark the millennium. You can stand on a step and touch the naked newborn child, still attached with an umbilical cord, to the block of stone from which he's been carved. The words running around the stone are from St John's Gospel. In the beginning was the Word. Inside, the church is a bright, calm space after the bustle outside. As part of the refurbishment, it's been redecorated in pale cream with discreet touches of gold. There's a central aisle and others on either side below a gallery which runs along both sides of the nave. Between the aisles are rows of dark oak pews, and towards the front on the left is a tall 18th century wooden pulpit, its 6 panels carved with cherubs and shells. The ceiling is barrel-shaped and decorated with intricate plasterwork. There are 2 rows of chandeliers, but during some of the concerts that take place here in the evenings, the church glows with a soft light from hundreds of candles. In the daytime, though, the space is flooded with light through the tall arched windows at ground and first floor level. On the ceiling of the sanctuary is a dazzling golden sunburst representing God, and a coat of arms with a globe, a golden lion, and a white unicorn. The royal coat of arms of King George I, who was the first church warden. To right and left of the sanctuary are 2 doors which lead up to rooms with small paned windows overlooking the altar. The room on the right was set aside for the First Lord of the Admiralty, that on the left reserved for the royal family. The triple window at the far end is of plain etched glass within a steel web of vertical and horizontal black stripes. A third of the way down, the web is stretched out of shape by an oval section resembling a hole. A controversial design. It looks to some as if a stone has been cast through the glass. Others can see a cross in the design, the oval being perhaps the shape of a head inclined to one side. The window is intended to inspire reflection and prayer, and was designed in 2006 by the Iranian artist Shirazeh Hushyari and the architect Pip Horn. St. Martin's has been described as an interfaith church, a place of welcome for believers, doubters, and those who are seeking. Its patron saint is St. Martin, who showed compassion by slashing his cloak in half and sharing it with a beggar. Dick Shepherd, who was an army chaplain and then the vicar of St. Martin's during the First World War, followed the saint's example by offering food and shelter to weary soldiers returning from the trenches. The crypt became an air raid shelter during both world wars, and the church became established as a centre for social work, offering support for unemployed ex-soldiers and help for people in distress. It still provides accommodation for rough sleepers through a project called The Connection, which cares for around 7,500 people each year. The door is always open to the homeless, who are welcome to rest in the church. St. Martin's has a strong musical tradition and became renowned for Baroque and early music through the concerts broadcast during the war by the BBC. Later, the world-famous Academy of St. Martin in the Fields was formed by Sir Neville Mariner. People still flock to the free lunchtime concerts of classical music, the candlelit concerts in the evenings, and jazz in the crypt. During the Second World War, my uncle founded the St. Martin's Singers, formed from a group of fire watchers who sang together between stints of duty on the church roof. This group still exists, and the singers hold regular concerts in aid of UK charities. The restoration project has made St. Martin's more welcoming than ever. A glass pavilion to the left of the building provides access by stairs and lift to underground spaces, lit by natural light flooding down from a circular glass light well. There's a spacious new foyer and shop, and the crypt houses a cafe serving home-cooked food. A wide corridor leads to a Chinese community centre, and also to the simple Dick Shepherd Chapel, a quiet place of reflection at the heart of the busy city. If you visit, there's an audio guide of the church available from the shop in the crypt, that's been especially prepared for blind or partially sighted visitors and includes more detailed description. Part of a poem by Andrew Motion can be found inscribed on the handrail around the top of the circular lightwell in Church Walk. It was written in 2006, and it reads, "Now traveller, whose journey passes through tall courts of shifting light and trudging crowds, continually worn down but always new, your stepping inwards from the air to earth winds round itself to meet the open sky. So vanishing becomes a second birth. Farewell, return. Farewell, return again. Here home and elsewhere share one mystery. Here love and conscience sing the same refrain. Here time leaps up and strikes eternity."
Now, a new type of article offering wildlife recordings from the chair and members of the Wildlife Sound Recording Society around the world. In this piece, Alan Burbridge describes a sailing trip around the Inner Hebrides and the wildlife sounds he recorded.
Hi, my name is Clive Davis, and I am the chair of the Wildlife Sound Recording Society. We are a worldwide community of recordists, both professional and amateur, with a variety of different interests. Every year, we have a competition for a short documentary, and it is great that we can share these entries with you now. The first is by Alan Burbidge, which is titled Fantasy Island. Enjoy.
It was my wife, Teresa's idea. She said, It is all very well you going off recording, but we should have a hobby that we can do together. And so it was that our shared passion for sailing was born. But my passion for sound recording is more of an obsession, and my thoughts turn to how could I combine both hobbies. Simple. We sail in Scotland and island hop. Here we are again, at Ardfern, approaching the marina, ahead of a week of sailing around the Inner Hebrides. Even on arrival, the forecast isn't great. The wind is soon increasing, yachts in the harbour strain on their lines, and the wind whistles in the halyards. But up here on the northwest coast, the weather can change on a whim, so time to get some kip and see what tomorrow brings. True to form, the next morning dawns fair and bright, with a good sailing breeze. So off we go, cutting through the water, with therapeutic sounds almost like waves on the shore. With fair wind and a fair tide, we approach a cluster of uninhabited islands, drop anchor and row ashore to explore, accompanied, of course, by my recording gear. The island is surrounded by high cliffs, apart from a small sheltered bay from where we ascend the heights. Along the way, a greenshank calls from the rocky shore. And, as we climb, quite unexpectedly, in the mid-afternoon sunshine, a storm petrel chirrs from a small crevice between rocks in a boulder field. This is a seabird paradise. Rat-free, the birds prosper, nesting on almost every available cliff ledge or rocky outcrop. A shag calls from its nest under a rocky overhang, keen-eyed, noting anything moving anywhere near its chick. High on the cliffs and high above a gully, kittiwakes make their presence known as gulls patrol the island perimeter. Not far away, on the cliff edge, razorbills hold conversations and guillemots and their young call incessantly from their colony. less common here, but very vocal, formal pairs converse from cliff edge nests. Hidden in grassy banks are secret entrances, patrolled by sentinels, their bright white chests and colourful bills gleaming in the intense sunlight. Deep within these burrows come the unmistakable calls of puffins as they communicate burrow to burrow. It's been a fantastic afternoon, almost calm, bright sunshine, the crash of the sea far below. But all too soon it is time to head back to the yacht. The tide will soon be turning, and disturbingly, mare's tails and a mackerel sky build from the west. Might be a storm coming, and we need to get into a safe harbour for the night. I wonder what tomorrow will bring.
Now, as I mentioned at the beginning, here from TNF Soundings is a list of audio-described programmes available on television, courtesy of our friends at the Wharfdale Talking Newspaper.
Now for the audio-described television programmes starting Saturday 7th and ending 14th of September 2024, compiled by Sarah and read by Diane. We'll start with Saturday the 7th. The morning option start at 8.25 on BBC Two with the Chris McCausland Show, where you can be entertained with a series of celebrity guests. Next at 10 on BBC Two is City in the Sky, when Dallas Campbell and Hannah Fry explore what it takes to get a million people and their luggage into the air. On Channel 5 at 9.25am, there's a couple of episodes of Bargain-Loving Brits in the Sun, and at 11.40 on ITV, there's Jason Atherton's Dubai Dishes, when he escapes the city for an adventure in Dubai's Hajar Mountains. At midday on BBC One, there's a dose of Homes Under the Hammer. This week are surprises at every turn in the auction room. Back to foodie programmes. At 12pm on BBC Two, there's a cook abroad, Monica Galetti's France. Monica travels to the Jura Mountains in France to delve into the region's rich culinary traditions. Moving on to evening viewing. BBC One kicks off at 5.15 with the series Made in Korea, The K-Pop Experience. At 6.30pm on Channel 4, there's live coverage of Day 10 of the Paralympics Paris 2014. In this session, Hannah Cockcroft and Kate Adenagan compete for gold in the women's T34 800-metre final. On ITV at 7.15, there's a special edition of Celebrity Catchphrase when guests decipher well-known phrases from animated clues. At 8.25 on BBC One, there's a double bill of Casualty. As the emergency department goes into lockdown, Cam tries to escape his past and Jacob takes matters into his own hands. Will it all get sorted? BBC Two has music on from 8.25 with The Magic of Mozart at the Proms from the Royal Albert Hall. This isn't audio described, but still may be enjoyable for some. You can catch up with the highlights of Day 10 of the Paralympics at 10.30pm on Channel 4, featuring the T34 100-metre final, F63 shot put final, and judoka Chris Skelly's quest for a medal. If you fancy a late-night film, you've got three action-packed options. At 10.25 on BBC One, there's Pirates of the Caribbean, Salazar's Revenge, where you can join Jack Sparrow and young Henry Turner on an epic quest for Poseidon's trident. Expect plenty of action. ITV's offering is Gladiator at 10:40 p.m. Russell Crowe stars as a former general turned gladiator in this Oscar-winning epic, seeking revenge against a corrupt Roman emperor. Over on Channel 4 at 11:35 p.m. there's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Quentin Tarantino's darkly comic drama with Leonardo DiCaprio and Brad Pitt, exploring the intertwined lives of a failing actor and the notorious Manson family. Now, looking at Sunday, 9th of September. Starting in the morning, Rise and Shine with some farmhouse fun on ITV at 8:30 a.m. with Jimmy and Chivy's Farmhouse Breakfast. They're joined this week by guests Dick and Dom. Continuing with Culinary Adventure, at 11:15, ITV has Jason Atherton's Dubai Dishes, where Jason escapes the city and heads to the stunning mountains of Dubai. Meanwhile, on BBC Two at 11:30, Levi Roots is bringing some sunshine into your day with Caribbean food made easy. Moving into the afternoon, there's plenty of choice today. If you're still in the kitchen mood, switch to BBC Two at 12 for Lorraine's fast, fresh and easy food when Lorraine whips up a slow-baked leg of lamb. If you're ready for a gentle comedy, at 2:05, ITV has Bruce Almighty starring Jim Carrey. Bruce is given almighty powers to show him just how tough it is to run the world. There's a couple more films in the afternoon for you to choose from. If you're into action, at 4:05, ITV has The Living Daylights with Bond on a mission to rescue a Soviet general after a daring defection. Meanwhile, on BBC One at 4:10, the kooky and spooky Addams Family is back in The Addams Family 2. This one is fun for the whole family. Over on Channel 4 at 4:30, The Secret Life of the Zoo takes you behind the scenes at Chester Zoo, where a male cardinal fish does something truly amazing. He gives birth. At 5, BBC Two continues the adventure, a celebrity race across the world. The teams are now halfway through their journey and about to enter the heart of South America. And for property enthusiasts, also at 5, Channel 4 has Kirsty and Phil's Love It or List It, Brilliant Builds. They're revisiting two couples who were struggling with their home layouts. Will they stay or will they go? For nature fans, at 5:35, BBC One has Wild Isles, with David Attenborough taking you through the beautiful woodlands, showcasing their incredible variety and uncovering hidden stories. Finally, the evening choice. At 8, BBC Two have more big cat drama with Big Cats 24/7. In this episode, the lion pride males are injured, leaving the mothers with cubs vulnerable. If you prefer a police drama, over on ITV at 8 p.m. there's Grace, Want You Dead. Grace is on the case to solve a mysterious murder in the Sussex countryside. At 9 is BBC One's drama Sherwood. In this episode, the community is in turmoil after an assassination attempt, and Daphne's past is coming back to haunt her. Meanwhile, at 9 p.m. on BBC Two, we're mixing comedy with mystery in The Misinvestigations of Romesh Ranganathan. Romesh is trying to crack the mysterious death of Jimi Hendrix. Expect some laughs along the way, but also some strong language too. As the evening moves into later night viewing, at 10:15 on ITV, there's a chilling true life documentary, The Murder of Molly McLaren, Social Media Murders. This harrowing story delves into the case of Molly McLaren, who was tragically stalked online and murdered by her ex-boyfriend in 2017. If you're rather in the mood for a rom-com, at 10:30 p.m, BBC One has the film The Proposal. A high-powered businesswoman faces deportation but convinces her PA to marry her. It's a funny and heartwarming story, perfect for a cosy night in. There are programmes that are on at the same time each weekday. On BBC One, Bargain Hunt at 12:15 every day and Doctors at 2 in the afternoon with the exception of Friday. At 2:30 p.m, there's Make It at Market. On BBC Two at 2:30 every day, there's My Unique B&B. Also, there's Great British Railway Journeys at 6:30 with Michael Portillo. Over on ITV at each day at 2 p.m, there's Dickinson's Real Deal. Channel 4 have Narrow Escapes at 2:10, Find It, Flog It, Fix It at 1:10, and Chateau DIY at 3 p.m. each day. Finally, there's an episode of The Simpsons every day at 6:30. Moving on to Monday, 9th of September. In addition to the regular daytime programmes at 3, BBC Two has MasterChef The Professionals. The top six chefs face off in a quarter final, focusing on the humble onion. There's the usual soaps on, with EastEnders at 7:30 on BBC One, Emmerdale at 7:30 on ITV, and then at 8, Coronation Street with an emotional hour-long episode. Billy is in a race against time to say a final goodbye to Paul. Nick reports Rowan to the police, and Leanne holds the key to recovering Amy's money. Tissues at the ready. Over on Channel 4 at 8, there's Jamie, What to Eat This Week, Autumn. He's serving up a cosy menu featuring Savoy cabbage farfalle, cheesy onion soup and a herby tomato galette. At 9 o'clock, BBC One wraps up the intense drama Sherwood with its final episode. All the threads of the investigation come together as the community looks to the future. Don't miss the thrilling conclusion. Also on 9 on BBC Two, forensic science takes centre stage in Forensics The Real CSI. The victim of a serious knife attack is fighting for their life, and forensic evidence becomes key to solving the case. Continuing with crime documentaries, at 9 p.m, Channel 4 has a true crime special with 24 Hours in Police Custody, Murder on Prescription. A 47-year-old disabled woman is found dead with her throat cut, leading to a major twist in the investigation. Finally, at 9 p.m, over on ITV, there's Mr. Bates versus the Post Office, The Impact. This documentary explores the impact of the case as portrayed in the drama series. Moving on to late night viewing, at 10 p.m, Channel 4 is asking the big question, Trump, should we be scared? Matt Fry speaks to those who know Donald Trump up close as he asks just how worried we should be if Trump wins the upcoming US presidential election. Also at 10 p.m, BBC Two offers a lighter option with the comedy drama We Might Regret This. Expect strong language and some adult humour. Back on BBC One at 10:40, Alison Lapper takes us on an artistic journey in My Own Words, Alison Lapper. This emotionally intimate documentary explores Alison's life through her art and personal archives. If you're in the mood for something lighter, at 10:50, ITV has Heathrow, Britain's busiest airport. For any night owls, at 11:05, Channel 4's 24 Hours in A&E takes a look back at some of the most memorable cases from down the years. Meanwhile, on BBC Two at 11:05, don't miss the Zelensky story. With unique access to Vladimir Zelensky and Olena Zelenska, this documentary tells the extraordinary journey of a comedian who became the real president of his country. It's an inspiring story of resilience and leadership. Finally, close your night on BBC One at 11:55 with The Journey to Scotland's Remotest Pub. Follow two friends as they take on the challenging journey to the magical Knoydart Peninsula with stories from the locals that will warm your heart. Perfect way to end the day. Now for Tuesday, 10th of September. 10:15, there's Homes Under the Hammer on BBC One. If you need a little afternoon escape, join the crew on Escape to the Country at 3 on BBC One when three generations of the same family find their dream home in rural Norfolk. Moving on to look at the evening, ITV's usual schedule has been taken over by Nations League football at 6:45 when England plays against Finland. The match is not audio described, but the commentary and general punditry may be of interest. EastEnders is on BBC One, followed by Celebrity MasterChef at 8, also on BBC One. It's the semi-finals and only 8 celebrities are left standing, but the heat is on as they face two tough challenges. Also at 8, but on BBC Two, there's Digging for Britain. Alice Roberts is back with more fascinating finds. If you're in the mood for something more dramatic, switch to Channel 4 at 8 p.m. for Emergency Helicopter Medics when emergency care is brought to critically ill or injured people across the country. At 9 p.m. on BBC One, there's Waterloo Road, and over on BBC Two at 9, there's more high-stakes medical drama, Saving Lives in Cardiff. Eye surgeon Magdalena Popiella fights to save a woman's sight while orthopaedic surgeon Claire Carpenter juggles a wave of emergencies. Also at 9, Channel 4 has your crime fix sorted with 24 Hours in Police Custody. The detectives are closing in on their final suspect as they unravel a case involving a dead murder suspect and a large stash of heroin. If you're up for some laughs before bed, don't miss Colin from Accounts on BBC Two at 10 p.m. Gordon's house is overrun by chaotic visitors and it's all a bit much. Expect strong language and adult humour. For something a bit grittier, at 10 p.m. on Channel 4 has a chilling murder investigation in Murder Case, The Digital Detectives. Specialist forensic cops use groundbreaking techniques to solve a brutal killing in a Scottish nature reserve. Who did it? Tune in to find out. At 11:05, Channel 4 is airing The Prison Confessions of Gypsy Rose Blanchard, Born a Prisoner. It tells the story of Gypsy Rose, who is convicted of killing her mother in 2016. In this series, she reveals the shocking truth about her life. This is one you won't want to miss. We're now on to Wednesday. There are the regular daytime programmes we covered a bit earlier, and BBC One has another episode of Escape to the Country at 3 p.m. when a couple search for a property in North Yorkshire. In the evening, if you're after your daily dose of soap, there's EastEnders on BBC One at 7:30 and Emmerdale over on ITV at the same time. The rest of the evening on ITV is taken with this year's National Television Awards, hosted by Joel Dommett. I wasn't sure who he is either, but he's apparently a comedian and a TV show host. Back to BBC One, there's the repair shop at 8 when the talented team repair a 19th century Indian embroidered coat and a children's motorbike made from scratch by someone's dedicated dad in 1965. Expect a few tears and the usual general loveliness. Over on BBC Two at 8 p.m, Chris Packham continues to chronicle the Earth's evolution in the aptly named programme Earth. Did you know our planet first formed over 4.5 billion years ago? You've plenty of choices of programmes in the 9 o'clock slot. Channel 4 has Grand Designs with Kevin MacLeod looking back on some of his favourite grand builds over the last 25 years. On BBC Two, there's the second episode of The Zelensky Story, and on BBC One, the penultimate episode of Celebrity Race Across the World, when the teams travel from Tigre, high up in the far north of Argentina, to the mountain town of Tilcara. Later on in the evening, Channel 4 continues the property theme with a new series of extraordinary extensions. This week, a couple add an underground swimming pool and a spa extension to their Warwickshire home. If you want a late evening laugh, there's another episode of Cullen from Accounts, and over on BBC One at 10:40, then the musical biopic Respect with Jennifer Hudson playing the musically brilliant Aretha Franklin. We're now covering Thursday, 12th of September. Afternoon viewing is covered by the regular programmes, and the early evening kicks off at 7:30 with EastEnders on BBC One and Emmerdale on ITV. Channel 4 continues their series George Clark's Old House, New Home at 8 p.m. This week, George tackles a house where the previous owner removed the upstairs walls, resulting in having to pass through the bedrooms to access the bathroom. Also at 8, BBC Two are showcasing more luxurious properties in amazing hotels, Life Beyond the Lobby. Monica Galletti and Rob Rinder work in the Intercontinental Shanghai Wonderland Hotel. On BBC One, in this slot, Celebrity MasterChef continues. At 9 on BBC One, Olympic champion Dame Jessica Ennis-Hill explores her family history in Who Do You Think You Are? Amongst other things, she discovers her four-time great-grandmother's journey from enslavement to land ownership. On BBC Two at 9, Greg Wallace explores paint and wallpaper production in Inside the Factory. And finally, at 9, over on Channel 4, there's a new series of Taskmaster, where 5 stars attempt to win favour of the Taskmaster by completing a series of fiendish tasks. If you'd like to end your day with a film, BBC Two are offering the period drama Belle, the true story of Dido Elizabeth Belle, the illegitimate dual heritage daughter of a British serviceman who is raised by her aristocratic uncle. At 11:40, BBC One has a fascinating sounding documentary, Hell Jumpers, which follows a group of idealistic young people across the world who head to Ukraine following Russia's invasion to help victims evacuate their homes. Finally, to Friday, 13th of September. Early evening, ITV has the usual drama with Emmerdale at 7:30 and Corrie at 8. If you're interested in paleontology, at 7:30, BBC One has The Dino Hunters, when a group of enthusiastic amateurs and professionals join forces to unearth secrets from a time when dinosaurs roamed the earth. This is followed on BBC One at 8 by the charming series David and Jay's Touring Shed. This week they visit Ragley Hall in the Midlands and help repair an old teddy. Channel 4 has a new series of Gogglebox at 9, followed by First Dates at 10, when various singletons hope to be paired with someone they connect to. To round off your evening, BBC One has food, fun and horror on offer in that order. Firstly at 9, the MasterChef celebrities are competing for a place in next week's finals. This is followed by the comedy Daddy Issues with Amy Lou Wood and David Morrissey. And finally, after the news at 10:40, there's the sci-fi horror Alien starring Sigourney Weaver. For anyone not familiar with the film, it's a fast-paced, at times scary thriller about a space crew who, on their way back to Earth, go off to investigate strange signals coming from a nearby planet. So there you go. Whether you're in the mood for drama, comedy, documentaries or something in between, there's something for everyone.
Once again, I'm delighted to welcome back Peter Burley, refreshed from his holiday, with his take on events and entertainment upcoming in our area. Peter.
OK, Peter Burley bringing you the diary of events of things coming up from mid-September to mid-October. And I will kick off in the Cathedral, where on the 18th of September, there's a Wednesday lunchtime organ concert, and that's 12:30 p.m. in the Crossing, and it's being given by Hannah Gill, who is from St Albans. And don't forget, the concerts are free, but there's a retiring collection. Now, with any couple of other events on in the Cathedral in our period, they're both on the same day, at different times, you'll be pleased to hear. On the 21st of September, at 2 p.m, there's a performance by Harpenden Magic Voices Choir, and they're doing a lunchtime choir concert featuring music from Queen to Mamma Mia, Frozen to The Greatest Showman. Probably in the Crossing again, he doesn't say so. There is a retiring collection, but the concert itself is free. Then on the 21st of September, at 6:30 p.m, there's an International Organ Festival concert by Darius Batiwala. And he is the Leeds City organist. He's been here before. The concert appears to be free, but you're invited to a drinks reception afterwards, despite it being free. It sounds like a pretty good evening out if you like organ music and wine. He'll be performing works by Giroufle, Boulanger, Bach and Busoni, Whitlock and Dupré. And that, as I say, is the last event I can find in their programme until we move on to October. Oh, mid-October, I should say. Now, back to St Peter's. And they've finally got their website fully up and running. And I can now confirm the lunchtime concerts, second Wednesday of each month, 1 p.m. No booking required and refreshments are available afterwards. And on the 18th of September, we have, I don't know, it's a duo or a group called Box and Fur. 25th of September, Charis on the violin and Jack on the piano. And then on the 2nd of October, we have Ryan Hepburn on the marimba. That sounds interesting. And finally, on the 9th of October, a choir from Sandringham School. Now, the Felice Opera Company have an afternoon gala opera at the Coppet Hall in Essex. I mean, it's just over the boundary, but it's a local group. Unfortunately, there's no more detail other than the date and the venue. But if you haven't ever been to Coppet Hall, it's really worth a visit. It's an amazing restoration project. Now, 28th of September, the Amadeus Chamber Orchestra are performing works in St Peter's Church at 7:30 p.m. And that's going to be Debussy's Petite Suite, Ravel's Piano Concerto, Debussy's Prelude à l'après-midi d'un faune, and Stravinsky's Pulcinella Suite. Now, tickets are available on the door for £18, or if you contact Ticket Source in advance by phone, and their phone number is 033 666 4466. Now, the St Albans Symphony Orchestra have a concert also at St Paul's Church, and that's going to be on Saturday the 12th of October at 7:30 p.m, and that's St Paul's Church on Hatfield Road, and they're going to be performing Moberg's Sunrise from Sunrise Orchestral Suite and works by Arietwinian and Sibelius's Symphony No. 2. Unfortunately, it then goes on to say that tickets will be on sale soon, so I can't give you any more details about that. Now, the Organ Theatre has two events in our period. On Saturday the 12th of October, we have a concert by Bernard Tilly, who has played organ since the age of 11. and has been the musical director for 30 pantomimes. So that's a regular concert. And then there was a Sunday musical afternoon the next day, that's Sunday the 13th of October. Now, the events are free to members, but adults, £12. Now, let's move on to the Auburn Arena. And a deep breath here. We have, on Thursday, the 19th of September, 7:30 p.m., it's 80s Live, so it's a show about the 1980s, and that all tickets for that are about £30. Then we have Ben Elton in Authentic Stupidity. It's a one-man stand-up show, Saturday the 21st of September, 7:30 p.m. It was £34.50, but the programme says it's sold out, but very often they keep a reserve list. So if you're a great Ben Elton fan, it might be worth contacting the arena nearer the time. Then, on the 22nd of September, 7:30 p.m, we have A Night at the Movies. It's a soundtrack of your life, it says. Tickets for that are £30 or £28. Right, over the weekend of, or the week and weekend, Wednesday the 25th of September to Saturday the 28th, starting at noon and running through to 11 p.m. each evening, we have the Beer and Cider Festival. It's an excellent event. And there's usually lots of other things going on along with it, as well as a really amazing selection of beers and ciders. Ah, we have the greatest hits of Motown and a show called How Sweet It Is. And that's obviously a Motown tribute show. And that is going to be on Thursday, the 3rd of October, 7:30 p.m. All tickets £34. Then on Saturday, the 5th of October at 8 p.m, we have The Smiths, and they're giving a concert, and that will be £20 all tickets. Then on the 8th of October, 7:30 p.m, we have ABBA-mania, and that is obviously an ABBA tribute band, all tickets £28.50. Then we have Rachel Paris performing on Wednesday, the 9th of October at 7:30 p.m, and she is a one-woman stand-up comedy show. All seats are £22, but you have to be over the age of 14. Then on the 10th of October, we have Jeff Stelling performing at 7:30 p.m. And it's an exclusive evening of football nostalgia, fun and entertainment. And he works for Sky Sports. Tickets for that are £31.50 just to hear him, or £67 for a VIP ticket and you meet him. Then, on the 11th of October, 7:30 p.m, we have Radio Gaga doing a tribute concert to Queen. All tickets for that are £32. And lastly, on Saturday, the 12th of October at 7:30 p.m, we have Lucy Beaumont in a one-woman stand-up comedy show called Trouble and Strife. You have to pay £27 for that, and the age limit's gone up. You have to be at least 16 to attend. Now let's head to the frozen north and what's going on in Harpenden at the Eric Morecambe Centre. We have, on Sunday the 15th of September, quite a celebrity, Aled Jones in a one-man performance. She's been doing it for 40 years. Incredible. That's 7:30 p.m, Sunday the 15th of October, Aled Jones in concert at the Eric Morecambe Centre. And tickets for that are £32 for an ordinary ticket, £52 for a VIP ticket. And then I don't know what you get for this, but you can buy a super VIP ticket for £72. Right, now we have something which is not a tribute concert, I stress. The Tremolos will be performing with the Searchers Experience, which are a tribute band for the Searchers, and it's a programme called 60s Gold. It's on Friday the 20th of September, 7:30 p.m. All tickets are £31. Now, Thursday the 26th of September, 7:30 p.m, Sean Ryder, Happy Mondays, Fridays and Saturdays and Sundays. And this is a spoken word world tour. And tickets for that, it's rather the same as before. It's £32 ordinary price, VIP £52. But a week later, the super VIP with meet and greet is now £82. And another non-tribute concert, P.P. Arnold is appearing on Friday the 27th of September at 7:30 p.m. And really a great survivor from the pop world. Tickets that are £30 or VIP tickets at £77. Saturday the 28th at 7:30 p.m, there's a concert by The South, which is the remnants of a group that used to be called The Beautiful South. Anyway, their music was very good, and obviously they'll be performing some of their great hits from previous years. All tickets to that are £29. And then we have on the 29th of September the Da Vinci Michelangelo Experience. It's a multimedia performance celebrating Michelangelo and his work. All tickets for that are £24.50. And the last one we've got is Huey Morgan, a fun-loving criminal, it says, and he'll be having fun on Friday the 4th of October at 7:30 p.m. He is a singer and comedian, and tickets for him are £29 or a VIP ticket £67. So, that's a bit of drama now, and we have got three events at the Abbey Theatre. The first runs from the 25th to the 28th of September, 7:30 p.m. each evening, with a Saturday matinee at 2:30 p.m. and all tickets £22. It's on the main stage and there are no concessions. Now, the programme is Merrily We Roll Along, performed by Ever After Productions, and it is an unmissable musical comedy by Stephen Sondheim. Then on 29th of September, we have Chinese Elvis Presents The Diverse Elvis Spectrum. And this is a rather eccentric tribute act to Elvis, but celebrating ethnic diversity. It's on Sunday the 29th at 2:30 p.m, so one performance only in the afternoon, and it's all seats are £18. And then lastly, on the 11th of October through to the 19th, the Company of Ten, performing in the Studio Theatre, are putting on a play called The Father. And this is going to be at 8 p.m. most evenings, with a Sunday matinee at 2:30 p.m. Tickets £14, concessionary tickets £12. Now, it's an award-winning play and was recently made into a very moving film starring various people, including Anthony Hopkins. And it's about a man called Andre and the struggles that his daughter has looking after him, balancing the needs for love, care and living a life of her own. It's tragically moving and apparently will leave you with plenty to consider. Now, we've got almost nothing else on in terms of art or drama except one performance in The Maltings by OVO. This is the Maltings in the theatre in the Maltings Centre, and it's a popular comedy club which is going to be running on the evening, and I have managed to miss the date off my script. So one evening in our period, doors open at 7, there's a bar, performance starts at 8 p.m. and the tickets are £17. They've been there before and apparently it's very good, and I'm sorry I've missed off the date. Now, if we go to the museums, we've got the regular talks on Roman history, which I preview each time, but we've got one evening formal talk. It's going to be on the history of St Albans School of Art, and it's being done in collaboration with University of Hertfordshire Arts and Culture. That's going to be on Wednesday the 18th of September. It starts at 6:30 p.m. It runs until 8 p.m. and you can either go in person, in which case you'll have to pay £10 and you sit in the courtroom and listen to it, or you can book to listen to it online for £6. If you buy your ticket and go along in person, you get a glass of wine as well. Now, we've got the Sahas lecture programme getting fully into its swing. Now, they have got, I think I said this last time, a new venue now. It's Dagdale Street Baptist Church. And the first of their meetings there is going to be on Tuesday, the 17th of September. And it's called Challenges Facing Britain's Historic Churches. And it's been given by Sir Philip Rutnam, who is the expert on saving churches. It's in person only, so there was no Zoom option, and he will share his time as chair of a National Churches Trust, talking about some of their projects. As ever, it's £5 on the door if you're not a member, or free if you're a member. Tuesday the 24th of September is their annual general meeting. Past experience suggests that this is measured in minutes rather than hours, and will be followed by a talk I can't recommend too highly. It's by their president, John Warwood, who's been researching what happened in St Albans in the Civil Wars, the English Civil Wars. And this is a chapter of St Albans history that's almost unknown. You won't find much about it in any of the standard books. And John's done this fantastic research, which includes locating a whole load of defence works built around St Albans, all dismantled after the Civil War. but also an extraordinary account of, so, of an assassin being sent to St Albans to murder Sir Thomas Fairfax. So he's got a stack of fantastic information about this. And the last one in our period is on Tuesday the 8th of October, historic building, myth-busting, uncovering folklore, history and archaeology. And this is by Dr. James Wright. And this is in the church and on Zoom as well. And it's looking at stories behind some of the more interesting medieval buildings in the country. Now, the Harbenden Local History Society has a talk in the Eric Morecambe Centre on the 24th of September at 8 p.m. And the talk's on the subject of the restoration of Wheatamsid Railway Station. And it's being given by Patrick McNeil of the Wheatamsid History Society. And if you're familiar with Wheatamsid, it's a wonderful restoration project that they've done there. And one of the most surprising things you discover if you go there and look at the restored station and the information there is that there was one train a day from Wheatamsid to Moorgate, direct, no changes, 45 minutes. That's extraordinary that you could get from Wheatamsid to Moorgate in 45 minutes without changing trains. And there's things like that that Patrick will be talking about. Now, I'm going to end with two events at St Stephen's Church, the venue we don't very often have a chance to preview. And the first is a special service on the 21st of September at 6:30 p.m. It's a short service, lasts only 30 minutes, but it's a service for the guide dogs. So it's a service for well-behaved pets to thank them for their love and companionship. So it's at 6:30 at St Stephen's Church. That, of course, disqualifies our Jack Russell from going along. And the second event at St Stephen's is on Saturday the 28th of September, 7:30 p.m. There's a talk being put on by the Friends of St Stephen's by John Mean, who's one of the great luminaries of Sarhaus. It's called The Naughty Vicar, The Reverend Henry Small and the Missing £20,000. Tickets for that are £10 if you aren't a member, and you can get a ticket by contacting their box office, which is 01727 862 598. And I will leave you with one last alcoholic event where it says, raise your glasses, gin and jazz returns this October. And the October evening in question is the evening of Friday the 4th of October, when the businesses up and down George Street will open their doors for late night shopping, line the street with fabulous gin bars, and there'll be jazz music and food stalls. It's a free event and a brilliant buzz for all it says. And their final comment is, shop, sip and enjoy. So, be interested to see if anyone goes there and what it was like.
New York City, like London, has wonderful buildings and monuments. Here, Marty Markowitz describes the parachute jump at Coney Island, the Atlantic resort just outside of New York City.
Hello, I'm Marty Markowitz, president of the Borough of Brooklyn. I want to describe for you the parachute jump tower at Coney Island. This structure, which we now call proudly Brooklyn's Eiffel Tower, is an official New York City landmark, and I'm proud to have been able to support the effort to restore it and bring it to bright new life as a shining symbol of the revitalization of Coney Island. Beginning in 1941, the parachute jump was a thrill ride, the main attraction at Steeplechase Park, one of the amusement parks at America's favorite playground, Coney Island, USA. People would sit in a leather sling, be raised 250 feet in the air, and then a parachute would open above them, and they'd float gently down to earth. Strangely enough, the jump was originally designed for a military purpose, to train the paratroopers who would be fighting in World War II, but it took on another purpose once the amusement industry found out how fun it was for thrill seekers to climb so high and glide back down with such grace. Sadly, in 1968, it was decided that the jump was too costly to maintain as a working ride. The beautiful cloth canopies and cables were removed, and the tall, flower-shaped steel tower began to rust and fall into disrepair. So here it was, 257 feet tall, about as tall as a 25-story building. This sleek tower with beams and girders in crisscross patterns, creating an elegant lacework against the background of the sunset sky. There are three parts to the jump's steel skeleton. Its tall vertical tower is topped by a horizontal circle of steel that fans outward. All around the outside of the circle are smaller round wheels. If the tower were the stem of a flower, those steel circles would be its petals. The sides of the tower are not straight up and down. They gently curve in toward each other as they go from the ground to the top of the tower. To feel what I mean, hold your palms in front of your chest, facing each other, about a foot apart. Now move your hands up from your chest upward, gradually bringing your palms closer together as they move up. When your arms are fully extended, that will be the approximate shape of the tower. As I said, on the very top of the tower is a horizontal circular structure. It's about 85 feet in diameter. Those 12 smaller wheels around its edges are what the parachutes used to be attached to. I remember my friends riding them down while I stood safely on the ground, waved to them, probably while eating a Nathan's hot dog or two, and I'm sure large French fries. Thankfully, when the city wanted to pull down the tower in the 1970s, some very smart community activists made the case that it had value as a priceless piece of New York City pop culture history. They worked to have the jump declared a landmark. We were able to give the tower the respect it deserves and a brand new image with the help of modern lighting design. Now the entire tower is painted a deep red, and in the summer of 2006, the artist Lenny Schwingdinger designed special lights for the tower. Every evening, 17 floodlights and 450 LEDs create patterns of moving lights on the tower. There are six lighting schemes that reflect the seasons, holidays, and even the lunar cycles. So after almost 40 years in the dark, the parachute jump once again lights up the Coney Island skyline. I like to think of it as a beacon of light for this and future generations, and a symbol of growth and development for Coney Island and for all of Brooklyn.
At the beginning of the program, I played a little of Stormy Weather by the Peddlers, to my mind one of the most underrated jazz trios of the 60s and 70s. The three members of the Peddlers first met in a Manchester music shop. All three were looking for a new venture after their previous bands had folded. Following the teaming up, the band began rehearsals with the clear intention of developing a new approach. Roy Phillips, the keyboard player and vocalist, described their style as blues based with a touch of rock and jazz. We are trying to set trends. Their debut single, Let the Sunshine In, True Girl, coupled an energetic R&B track with an uncomfortable attempt at Merseybeat and started a run of five more singles and an EP for the Phillips label, most of which are collected on the 1968 compilation album The Fantastic Peddlers, highlights of which include Phillips's Whatever Happened to the Good Times and Anybody's Fool. In 1966, the group began a residency at Annie's Room in London, also playing the Scotch of St. James and the Pickwick, where the group's first album, Live at the Pickwick, was recorded. This album is a perfect You Were There document of the mid-60s London club scene, complete with a trying hard to be hip Pete Murray introduction and a semi-celebrity audience. The Peddlers' reputation as a live attraction spread, and after becoming the first Brits to play the Flamingo in Las Vegas, a deal with CBS was signed. The first album for CBS, Freewheelers, contained 11 cover versions of mainly standards, with one original song. The last album for CBS 1970's Birthday came with the music ranging from folk to jazz. Back at the Phillips label, the group released the excellent Three for All, which included Tell the World We're Not In, featured in the film Goodbye Gemini, which joined The Lost Continent from Three in a Cell as a Peddler's film theme. The group was as busy as ever on the live front, as documented by Phillips on Working Again. I was lucky enough to see them in 1978 at the now-defunct Playboy Club. The next release was Georgia on My Mind, a straight reissue of Live at the Pickwick, and was followed by the ambitious Sweet London, recorded with the London Philharmonic Orchestra. The Peddlers released their final album, Live in London. The mid-70s, however, was a different place, and the group called it a day soon after Live in London was released. The Peddlers were an underrated group who had in Roy Phillips an excellent musician, vocalist, and writer, and in Martin and Morris a rhythm section second to none. They left behind some great records, an enviable live reputation, and were a true sound of the 60s and 70s. Here's the full-length version of Stormy Weather.
Stormy Don't know why there's no sun up in the sky. Stormy weather since my gal and I are together keeps raining all the time. Life is bare, gloom and misery everywhere. Stormy weather just can't get my poor self together. I'm weary all the time. I don't know why there's no sun up in the sky. Stormy weather since my gal and I ain't together. It keeps raining all the time. When she went away, the blues walked in, met me. If she stays away, oh, the rocking chair will get me. All I do is pray the Lord above will let me walk in the sun once more. Can go on. I don't know why there's no sun up in the sky. Stormy weather since my gal and I together.
Finally, a list of historical events for the week and birthdays, compiled by Bob and John from Stevenage Talking Newspapers. The 8th of September, Paris attacked by Joan of Arc. On this day in 1429, French heroine Joan of Arc attempted to oust the Duke of Burgundy and take Paris for newly crowned King Charles VII. In the same year, she led the French army in a momentous victory at Orléans that repulsed an English attempt to conquer France during the Hundred Years' War. Captured a year afterward, Joan was burned to death by the English and their French collaborators as a heretic. She became the greatest national heroine of her compatriots, and her achievement was a decisive factor in the later awakening of French national consciousness. On the 9th of September in 1971, British Ambassador Geoffrey Jackson was freed 8 months after being captured by extreme left-wing guerrillas in Uruguay. Mr. Jackson, who was 56, had been captured by the Tupamaros, an urban guerrilla movement opposed to the country's right-wing government, in broad daylight as he drove to work on the 8th of January. Despite exhaustive searches and although hundreds of suspects were questioned, no clue to his whereabouts was discovered. His captors even arranged an interview with a Cuban journalist in which he revealed how he was kept in a windowless cell and jogged barefoot around the mud floor of his cramped jail to keep reasonably fit. On this evening, Mr. Jackson stayed in the Church of St. Francis of Assisi for about 50 minutes until British officials arrived. No ransom demands were ever made for Mr. Jackson, although 2 weeks after his detention, a letter from the guerrillas accused Britain of draining their country of wealth. On the 10th of September in 1845, Elias Howe took out a patent on the first sewing machine. Born in Spencer, Massachusetts, Elias Howe became a skilled machinist, apprenticing in a textile factory and then for a master mechanic. By April 1845, he had created a practical sewing machine. In a public demonstration, Howe's invention proved to be 5 times faster than the swiftest hand sewers. Howe was unsuccessful marketing his invention in the United States. In 1846, he went to England and sold the British rights for the machine to William Thomas, a large manufacturer of corsets, shoes, and umbrellas. Upon his return to the US, Howe found that some manufacturers, including Isaac Singer, had already begun to make and sell sewing machines similar to his. A five-year legal battle ensued, lasting from 1849 to 1854. Finally, his patent was declared basic, and he was awarded a royalty on every machine that infringed his patent. On the 11th of September 2008, a France-bound Eurotunnel shuttle train carrying heavy goods vehicles, HGVs, and their drivers caught fire while travelling through the Channel Tunnel. The fire lasted for 16 hours and reached temperatures of up to 1,000 degrees centigrade. Of the 32 people aboard the train, 14 suffered minor injuries, including smoke inhalation, and were taken to the hospital. The undamaged South Tunnel reopened on the 13th of September, and limited service began, with trains travelling in turn in alternating directions in the South Tunnel. Full service resumed in February 2009, after the completion of repairs costing €60 million. On the 12th of September, in 1666, the Great Fire of London ended. It was brought under control by a combination of factors, including the wind. The strong east wind dropped and changed direction to the south. Gunpowder. The Tower of London garrison used gunpowder to create firebreaks, stopping the fire from spreading further east. Confining the fire. Attempts to confine the fire were successful. The Great Fire of London had begun in a baker's shop in Pudding Lane on September the 2nd and lasted 5 days. The fire had spread quickly due to the strong wind and hot summer, and it destroyed 87 churches, 52 company halls, and more than 13,000 houses. London was rebuilt using stone and brick, a process that took 30 years to complete. On the 13th of September 2004, TV talk show host Oprah Winfrey gave a brand new Pontiac G6 sedan worth $28,500 to everyone in her studio audience, a total of 276 cars in all. Oprah had told her producers to fill the crowd with people who desperately needed the cars, and when she announced the prize, mayhem, crying, screaming, delirium, fainting all broke out around her. It was, as one media expert told a reporter, one of the greatest promotional stunts in the history of television. Alas, scandal wasn't far behind. For one thing, the gift wasn't really from Oprah at all. Pontiac had donated the cars, paying the hefty price tag out of its advertising budget, because the company hoped that the giveaway would drum up some enthusiasm for its new G6 line. The car company also paid the state sales tax on each of the automobiles it donated. However, that still left the new car recipients with a large bill for their supposedly free vehicles. Federal and state income taxes added up to about $6,000 for most winners. Some people paid the taxes by taking out car loans. Others traded their new Pontiacs for cheaper, less souped-up cars. "It's not really a free car," one winner said. "It's more of a 75% off car." Of course, that's still not such a bad deal. On the 14th of September 1964, the Kellogg's Company began selling the Pop-Tart. The innovative, portable breakfast treat-turned-anytime snack would go on to sell billions annually and help redefine the breakfast food market. It all started when one of Kellogg's biggest competitors, Post Consumer Brands, trumpeted to the press that it had created an innovative new breakfast item, a shelf-stable, fruit-filled, handheld toaster pastry called Country Squares. It sounded like the ultimate grab-and-go convenience food. The problem was, their pastry wasn't quite ready for market. While Post dragged its feet on the actual product release, Kellogg's, having heard the announcement, rushed to push out its own version. William Post, no relation to the company, a plant manager at the Michigan-based Heckman Biscuit Company, later described how a handful of Kellogg's execs showed up at his workplace out of the blue. They were waving two pieces of dough with some filling in it, saying, "We'd like to put that in a toaster." They asked if he could develop and manufacture it on the quick. Post and his team tried several versions of a new toastable pastry, roping in his own kids as taste testers. 6 months after the post-consumer brand's announcement, Kellogg's beat its rival to market. It didn't take long before marketing executives rechristened the pastry Pop-Tarts, lending it some of the kitschy cachet of pop art, a buzzy art movement of the time made famous by Andy Warhol and his Campbell's Soup can paintings. And now famous birthdays. September the 8th. Richard I was King of England from 1189, when he was 31, until his death in 1199. He also ruled numerous French possessions. As the third of five sons of Henry II of England and Eleanor of Aquitaine, he had not been expected to become king, but his two elder brothers predeceased their father. Despite being born and spending his childhood in England, Richard lived most of his adult life in the Duchy of Aquitaine, in the southwest of France. Following his accession to the throne, he spent perhaps as little as 6 months in England. Most of his reign was spent either on crusade, in captivity, or actively defending the French portions of the Angevin Empire. His reputation as a great military leader and warrior, especially during the Third Crusade, earned him the name Richard Coeur de Lion, or Richard the Lionheart. Though regarded as a model king and pious hero during the four centuries after his death, from the 17th century onward he was gradually perceived by historians as a ruler who preferred to use his kingdom merely as a source of revenue to support his armies, rather than regarding England as a responsibility requiring his presence as ruler. Nevertheless, he remains an enduring iconic figure both in England and in France. September the 9th. William Bligh was an officer in the Royal Navy and a colonial administrator, best known for the mutiny on HMS Bounty, which occurred in 1789 when the ship was under his command. 18 mutineers, led by the master's mate and Bligh's friend Fletcher Christian, set Bligh, then only a lieutenant, adrift in Bounty's launch, along with those crew loyal to him. They were given provisions, a quadrant, and compass, but no charts and no chronometer. Bligh had to use a pocket watch belonging to the ship's gunner to navigate. Even so, Bligh reached Timor with the loss of just one man, after a journey of over 4,000 miles of open sea. Bligh had a reputation, possibly undeserved, as a strict disciplinarian, but the reasons behind the mutiny continued to be debated. After the mutiny, the Bounty sailed first to Tahiti, then eventually reached the island of Pitcairn, where the remaining mutineers, including Christian, settled. Bligh went on to be a vice-admiral and governor of New South Wales. September the 10th. Born in 1968 in Hatfield, Guy Ritchie is a film director, producer and screenwriter who started out directing television commercials. His work includes British gangster films and the Sherlock Holmes film starring Robert Downey Jr. Ritchie made his feature-length directorial debut in 1998, with the crime comedy Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels, and gained further recognition in 2000 with his second film, Snatch, which found both critical and commercial success. Since then, he has had somewhat mixed directorial fortunes. Swept Away, starring Madonna, to whom Ritchie was married for 8 years, was critically panned and bombed at the box office, but other films received mixed reviews or were moderately successful. While the live-action adaptation of Disney's Aladdin was one of the highest-grossing films of 2019, earning $1 billion worldwide, and 2023's The Covenant received generally positive reviews. September the 11th. Franz Beckenbauer was a German football player, manager and official, born in 1945. Nicknamed the Kaiser, he is widely regarded as one of the greatest players of all time and is one of 9 players to have won the World Cup, the European Cup and the Ballon d'Or, and one of only 3 men to have won the World Cup as both a player and a manager. A central defender, he is often credited as having invented the role of the modern sweeper or libero. Twice named European Footballer of the Year, Beckenbauer appeared 103 times for West Germany, playing in 3 World Cups and 2 European Championships. At club level with Bayern Munich, Beckenbauer was the first player to win 3 European Cups as captain of his club. He became team manager and later president of Bayern Munich. September the 12th. Texan Barry White was a singer and songwriter born in 1944 in Galveston. Known for his romantic image, he earned the unlikely nickname of the Hippopotamus of Love, perhaps because he was overweight for most of his life, reportedly reaching over 26 stone at one point. He apparently smoked approximately 150 cigarettes a day, which probably contributed to his distinctive bass voice. His greatest success came in the 1970s, crafting many enduring songs, such as his two biggest hits, Can't Get Enough of Your Love, Babe, and You're the First, the Last, My Everything. White recorded 20 studio albums during the course of his career, with multiple versions and compilations released worldwide, leading to sales in excess of 100 million records, making him one of the best-selling music artists of all time. September the 13th. Born in 1916, author Roald Dahl has been described as one of the greatest storytellers for children of the 20th century. He received numerous awards, and his books have sold more than 300 million copies worldwide. Dahl was born in Wales to affluent Norwegian immigrant parents, but lived for most of his life in England. He was an RAF fighter pilot during World War II, before rising to prominence as a writer in the 1940s. Dahl's children's books are known for their unsentimental, macabre, often darkly comic mood, featuring villainous adult enemies of the child characters. But they also champion the kind-hearted and feature an underlying warm sentiment. They include James and the Giant Peach, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, Matilda, Fantastic Mr. Fox, the BFG, the Twits, and many more. His short stories for older audiences are known for their unexpected endings and include the collection Tales of the Unexpected. In later times, Dahl came under attack for his anti-Semitic views and for supposed racial and sexist stereotypes in some of his works. In 2023, Puffin Books, which holds the right to all Dahl's children's books, ignited controversy after they hired so-called sensitivity readers to go through the original texts, which led to hundreds of revisions to Dahl's books, a move supported in some quarters, but opposed in others. And finally, September the 14th. Clayton Moore, born in 1914, was an American actor best known for playing the fictional Western character The Lone Ranger from 1949 to 1957 in the television series of the same name and in two related films. The series' running plot involved the exploits of a former Texas Ranger, the sole survivor of an ambush by a gang of outlaws. Mysterious behind a black mask, this Lone Ranger roamed the West with his Indian companion Tonto to battle evil and help the downtrodden. Moore and co-star Jay Silverheels made history as the stars of the first Western written specifically for television. Moore was replaced without explanation for one season by another actor, but overall starred in 169 of the 221 episodes produced and made personal appearances in character for over 40 years. And that finishes up this edition of Saturn. My thanks to Vivian, Christina and Karen for reading the news, to Jilly for reading the radio listings, all at TNF Soundings, Stevenage talking newspapers for the week in history and birth dates, and to Peter for events and entertainment. Let me take this opportunity to wish you a safe, peaceful and hopefully sunny autumn. Please remember to return your USB stick and wallet after use, and please stay well and safe at home. Goodbye.